Hi, everyone. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting live from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam people. On today's episode, we have a very special guest, Nathan Clement. Nathan is a former Paralympic swimmer for Team Canada and is now a paracyclist for Cycling Canada. He has a very impressive sports resume that we will be exploring, and also a very expensive bike or trike that we will also be talking about. So we also have one of our collective members on today, Jackie.
It's nice to be on here.
Yeah. So Jackie is a second year student, right?
I'm a second year student.
All right. So what are you studying at UBC?
I'm majoring in psych, and I'm planning, or hoping to minor in commerce.
Why? Why commerce?
It's part of fulfilling like the Asian stereotype of like having something to do with like money wise. I don't know.
I feel like psychologists make a lot of money.
If you make it big.
I feel like it's important to note that both Jackie and I are Asian. I realize you can't tell because this is radio. I feel like psychologists, you just get a PhD and then you're fine. Like, there's a lot of running back and forth to get there.
Yeah, it takes a few years, so, you know, I'm going to need something else to get by.
That's true. What are you interested in psychology?
I'm hoping to go clinical.
Clinical, okay.
I'm sure, like, a lot of people are as well, so.
Yeah, I feel like very few people want to go the research route. I was in psych, and I wanted to go the research route, but I was very much so an outlier. But then I actually like did a few research classes and was like, I can't do this. So Jackie, you're part of the Accessibility Collective. Why'd you join?
For me, and I'm sure with a lot of people, mental health is a very important thing. And especially it can kind of like lurk up to you in like very unexpected ways, as it did for me. And I didn't really realize that I kind of had a mental issue. Until like one of my friend's mom, who was a psychologist, she was like, "Hey, I think you should come see me sometime." Like,
oh my gosh! Is that a conflict of interest? Like seeing her? I feel like it might be one thing for her to be like, "You should see someone," but seeing her,
I guess she was trying to just make some extra bucks. So
okay, anyways, maybe. So you joined the Accessibility Collective.
I joined it because I think it's a great way to spread more awareness.
Yeah.
And yeah, help out some people who are in need.
Yeah, the Accessibility Collective, kind of how it's run right now is we've kind of got three streams happening there. One of them is obviously disabilities and special abilities, and then one of them is neurodivergence, and then one of them is mental health and mental illness, and I guess it's kind of where you slot in,
yeah,
which is super cool. And it's funny because you're not on an episode surrounding mental
I know health. I know, it's weird,
but that's fine. So tell me a little bit more about yourself.
Do you have any I just cool said before hobbies? I'm Asian, so
word,
yeah. I've recently begun boxing lessons.
Oh my gosh, what kind of boxing? Just like boxing?
Just boxing, I guess.
Try Muay Thai. That's Muay Thai. Really fun.
People have said that. People have said it's more practical thing than just boxing.
I don't think either is super practical, but Muay Thai is definitely, I think it's more fun than boxing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just taking advantage of the boxing club here, because if you get like boxing lessons outside,
it's very expensive.
Yeah. But here I pay like 50 bucks for a term.
Nice.
So, very nice
that
deal.
Is really good. That's one thing that I love about UBC. It's that they offer a lot of really affordable services. Mm-hmm. Like, the gyms here are really cheap. I guess the boxing club is super cheap. If you want to swim at the pool, it's free. Hey, pool?
Yeah.
Or Nathan guy, swimmer, as we mentioned. Pottery club is really cheap if you can get in. It's borderline impossible to get in.
How long is the waiting list?
Little self promo here. I'm part of the pottery club, but it's just very difficult because we only have 20 spots per term and there's like 300 applicants. So
right.
Anyways, but that's one thing I love about UBC is they do offer a lot of really affordable services for just living life, which is cool.
Yeah.
Why do you want to join today's episode?
Well, it's mainly because in my high school, there were a lot of, I guess, staff members who are, like, associated with Team Canada.
What high school did you go to? Did you go?
Shawnigan, like,
school. You went to Shawnigan?
I went to Shawnigan. Do you know Shawnigan?
Oh, my gosh. I used to race at Shawnigan for rowing.
Really?
That's so funny. Like, I went every year. It was a horrid place to be.
It's very...
Shawnigan Lake, not the school. The school is gorgeous.
Yeah, the place is very...
The lake
dead,
is
I guess.
Terrible.
It's bad.
Yeah. But Shawnigan Lake High School is like Hogwarts. It's beautiful.
That's what everybody says when they first come to the Shawnigan place.
Anyway, you went to Shawnigan. That's so funny. And you have a lot of Team Canada.
Yeah, yeah. And
teachers? That's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. There was a rowing there wasn't. There is she's still working there as a math teacher. Megan Montgomery, she's a para rower, and I think she was in, and she, I don't know how many medals she has, but she has a few.
So, flex alert.
Flex alert. Yeah, and then, and then there was also an English teacher who was working there. He was part of Team Canada Rugby, so I think that's pretty neat. And, like, growing up, I've always thought, like, Olympians, Paralympians are kind of a sick deal, you know, like, representing her country on like a, I guess like a, I don't know, playing the sport you love and doing it at a national level is, I think it's a very sick thing. So
yeah, I like, well, I used to I didn't actually row. I was the little person in the front that steered and yelled, called the coxswain. But I definitely saw some of the ins and outs of what it's like to kind of transition from elite level rowing to national level rowing. And I will say, these people are living in borderline poverty, but they're so jacked. Which is
yeah, they're ripped.
Yeah, biceps popping. Anyways, awesome. That's really cool. It's really lovely to meet more of the collective members. We had another one on last week, and we will be having a lot more on later. And I'm just really stoked to be able to, like, have a community.
Yeah,
Anyways,
it's pretty cool.
We're gonna go to ad break, and then when we're back, we are going to introduce our guest today.
Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop is Vancouver's choicest destination for one-of-a-kind artist-made prints, posters, screen prints, riso prints, paintings, acrylic paintings, watercolor paintings, ceramic mugs, ceramic plates, ceramic bowls, ceramic pots, lapel pins, hats, toques, crochet bathing suits, jewelry, trinkets, knickknacks, hand-painted signs, curated thrift, and a bunch more stuff that won't fit in this designated block of airtime. Slice of Life Art and Gift Shop, located at 1636 Venables, just off Commercial, open 11 to 6, 6 days a week.
CITR is powered by Guayaki Yerba Mate. Yerba Mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaki Mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaki is more than just a Yerba Mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which includes stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of Yerba Mate. Visit guayaki.com, GUAYAKI.com, to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free Yerba Mate can.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM. So we've got our lovely guest today. Hello, Nathan.
Hello, thank you for having me here today.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Excited to talk sport and have a chat today.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit, or tell us a little bit about yourself. It can be anything.
At a very young age, 2.5 years old, I suffered a stroke, paralyzing the left side of my body, losing all functionality of my left arm and left leg. At the time, often doctors believe that it was caused by the chickenpox, but still, my condition, how it happened, is out for debate. But from a lot of support, from a lot of great organizations, I was able to regain some movement in my arm, in my leg. And because of friends, because of family, they tailored me into sport, where I've been able to compete and race for Canada in soccer, swimming, and now in cycling.
And I just want to ask, you said you were, tailored into sports. Was it part of, a recovery program at first? And then you kind of I really like this. I want to keep doing that. Or
not really the competitive side of it. When I had the stroke, one of the major things you do is hydrotherapy. So I was often in the pool a lot of the time at the, I'm from West Vancouver, so at the West Vancouver Community Center, doing a lot of their lessons, regaining motion, movement in my left arm and left leg, until about 2001, 2002, when the pool shut down for renovations. Then I kind of stepped away from sports, stepped away from activities for a little while, till my brother started getting into hockey, soccer, and I'd be going to his games on the weekend, and just wanted to eventually play and be a part of a team. So I joined soccer at the age of 9, and pretty well this team was absolutely stacked with athletes. We had Griffin Reinhardt and Alex Kerfoot, who've gone on to play in the NHL, as well as a couple other guys who've played big level soccer over in Europe. So me, as someone who can barely run, barely kick a ball, is on this team. And at first, for my parents and even myself, we were a little scared, a little worried that I'd be kicked off the team. But I was very fortunate to have a great coach who brought me on, showed me that I can play, I can do these sports. I just got to be the hardest worker on the field and just have fun in the team. And my friends on that team really supported me, bonded around me, and helped me get that confidence to play sport and really just make that a part of my life.
Yeah, that's cool. And how did you kind of pick out swimming from soccer? How did you really think, out of all these things I've tried, I think there's a possibility of going pro in swimming?
It was a really hard decision because as a kid I got into soccer, and as I was playing soccer I caught the eye of the Canadian cerebral palsy soccer team. Now I believe they're called the Canadian Para Soccer Team. And the head coach of the team, Drew Ferguson, wanted me to pick up a second sport kind of for conditioning, just so I could be really excelling in soccer down the road. So at the age of 13, 14, I was looking for another sport. And I went to a friend's swim meet and just kind of was like, I want to try this again. I want to give swimming a shot. So I started taking up swimming, and I'd be playing soccer, where I got carded and funded in soccer while still swimming. So I had to make a tough choice when I was about 17 years old, just finishing high school, was what path do I want to go down? Soccer, where I'm already being funded, paid, or swimming, where I'm barely even a provincial champion or a provincial level medalist. And I kind of took the risk, took the chance with swimming, and just wanted to see what could happen and hopefully aim for a Rio at that time.
Not to be too much of a stalker here, but I did do my due diligence. I did my research. Both of your parents are pretty well known in the athletic world.
I'm very fortunate to have a father and mother who are very driven in sport. My dad played junior B hockey in Ontario and played rugby provincially for the Ontario team, as well as raced against and run a lot of skiing and sport events up in Whistler back in the 80s and 90s. And my mom, who at one point held the summer swimming provincial record in BC in backstroke, as well as just a triathlete. And I'm 28 years old now. I think my mom's only taken 3 or 4 days in my life off sport. So she's just always around. They're always on the bike, always running, always doing different activities. and very much having athletes and people like that in my life has kind of showed me that they can do this. It takes work, it takes effort, and there's a lot that's possible.
Did your parents have like an opinion on whether or not you went into swimming or soccer, or were they just supportive of whatever you wanted to do?
They very much questioned it. They were thinking, because I had an opportunity where I was being funded in one sport to a sport where I would be receiving no funding, and I'd already had played my first cap, my first international appearance for Canada at mm-hmm. that point.
For soccer,
and I had to go out there and prove that this was the right choice at the end of the day, because at first they were really questioning it, like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And I was like, I just have a feeling swimming's going to work out over soccer. Like, it's a great team with soccer, great group of guys, great program they have there, but I just felt for me there was something in swimming and I wanted to chase it.
Hmm. All right. And was there ever, like, a moment where you kind of second-guessed your decision? Like, I know you said you believed it the whole way, but was there, like, a second of doubt or...
There were a couple times, like any athlete, there's moments where it's like, oh boy, I don't know, but you have to right that ship at the end of the day. One of them stuck out was at the Canadian-American Para Swimming Championships in Minneapolis, Minnesota in 2013. There's a system in parasport, and especially paraswimming, called classification, where everyone's tried to be played into an even field. And in my classification I had in Minneapolis, I got classed into a group that was a little too high for me, to the point where I wouldn't be even making any of the time standards, and it looked like my swimming career might be over in that moment, just because it's too high of a standard for me to reach with my condition. So fortunately, I was able to be classed to a more favorable classification for myself, and had to do a lot of work, because that spring I was told I was going to World Championships or I was going to Canada Games. I ended up going to neither. I didn't make the Canada Games team. I didn't make World Championships. So I had to spend that whole summer with that taste in my mouth of, I'm not racing right now. Mm-hmm. I have to work on this. I have to make this count.
How old were you?
I was 18 when that happened.
That's young.
So
that's
it really happened young. Like months, yeah. Like 5-6 months after I made that decision to go to swimming over soccer, and I missed out on that chance to qualify.
Did you ever feel like you made a mistake in choosing swimming?
No.
It's not the answer I was expecting, but I'm glad to hear it.
No. Later on, there had been some things that come up, but it's the journey of life, and at the end of the day, you're going to make decisions that you need to learn from, grow from, and go forward with, but it's part of your past, it's a part of who you are as a person now, and just really building off that. But I felt like swimming at that time I was so bent on making future teams after going through that summer of nothing, that I was so determined that I'm going to make it count next year.
So there was just, like, really no question in your mind that you were going to take it to that next level.
I was hoping to. And one of the major things that for me in my life at that time was I was really struggling with my mental health. Mm-hmm. I was often, I was depressed and even suicidal at points. So for myself, I was so hard on myself at that time, trying to make these teams, telling myself these lies of, like, if you make this team, you'll be happy. If you make this team, mm-hmm. you're going to be feeling great about yourself. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was just forcing myself, pushing myself beyond my breaking points, to where I eventually qualified for the Canadian national team in 2014 at that swim competition in Miami for the Canadian American Championships. I 2 weeks before going down there, I went in to see a doctor, and he told me that I completely tore my shoulder. Like, I could not lift it above my shoulder, lift it above my head. But I found a way to race. I found a way to push through that pain. just because
I was... Is that good for your body?
No, it's not good for my body at all. It's not good for my body at all.
We don't recommend this here.
Just a small tear, like right in the... I can't remember where it was.
Somewhere in there.
Somewhere in there where I was able to race, able to compete and qualify. But like that next day, I got up that next morning and then I had that punch of reality come where I was like, oh, there goes my shoulder. I can't use it. And I was out for 2 months after that. But there was almost a side to me then where, and with mental health, it's so important to have that time for self-care and really having your own self-compassion, which I did not have when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I was just pushing so hard to get to those points where I was not taking that time for that self-care and that self-compassion, which now that I'm older and have been through the rigmarole of that, I now understand in sport and how important that is.
Yeah, I show host here, another shameless self-promo. I used to do a varsity sport here at UBC, and I joined that team when I was 17. And I definitely like made those same promises to myself, like once you make this crew or whatever, you'll be happy. And I like very quickly learned that you can't achieve your way out of depression. That's just not how it works. But yeah, I think there's something so true in being young in sport and just thinking that you're invincible and going as hard as you possibly can and just hitting those walls all the time and thinking, I'll just push through this wall, and that's just not how it works.
Yeah. I had my dose of reality really come in 2015 where we had a training camp in San Diego, California, and during that camp, I was going so hard. During one of the sets and one of the practices I did, I completely blacked out and lost and went numb.
But in the pool?
In the pool, but I was still swimming, trying to make it to the wall. And I did 100 meters of butterfly, not being able to see or feel my body. And there was points where, like, during that camp, I would be just puking into home hardware buckets.
At least it wasn't in the pool.
Was it in the pool? No, puke made the pool, so that was a victory at the end of the day. But a couple weeks after getting back from San Diego and getting back from that training camp, I was on the pool deck in West Vancouver and still in that mindset, I just got to go. I was walking along the pool deck. All of a sudden, I felt a sharp pain in my brain. My vision went very blurry for a second. I felt I was starting to drool, and I collapsed right on the pool deck. At first, they thought it was a brain aneurysm, potentially another stroke.
How old were you at this point?
I would have been 20, I believe. Yeah,
okay.
I would have been 20.
Yeah.
And I had to be carted to Lionsgate Hospital in like January, temperatures where it was like -5 out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like just in my swimsuit and like some small little blanket. I was freezing my butt off at that point, and when I get into the hospital, they don't really know what's going on, but they clear me to come back. And that next day, there was a swim competition actually at the old pool at UBC. That old,
yeah, I remember.
That old dungeon,
I used to do swim meets there.
The old dungeon that pool used to be, and
you chose to race that.
Chose to race that. I was there at 6 a.m. after being discharged from the hospital at 9 p.m.
Did any of your coaches ever be like, you're going too hard?
Yeah, all the time.
And you were just like, screw off. I'll do what I want.
pretty well at that point. And then I did the competition. I felt fine that day. But the Sunday, same kind of feeling happened in my brain.
Yeah.
When then I was like, oh boy, I have to go back. And I was back in Lionsgate. And at that point, we have to figure out what's going on. So they said, we're going to do a lumbar puncture or a spinal tap, and I don't know.
That's really scary. Those
I've
are both very
heard
scary
of it,
procedures.
And it sounds scary.
Yeah, the needle
is large.
Huge. And going through that and going through what that was like and the after effects of the lumbar, because they didn't tell me what the after effects of the lumbar was, and I was through the rigmarole that next week. And at that point, once I finally was able to go back to the pool, my coaches sat me down being like, you have to train smart now. You have to really take care of yourself and train smart. Because we do not and we cannot have you leaving practices going in an ambulance. You have to take that time to know your limits and not go beyond them. And at that moment in that year, I was driven. I wanted to win a Pan Am medal. I wanted to win a medal at the Pan Am Games in Toronto. And at that point, it was like, all right, I have to win that medal, but I also have to take care of myself.
Right.
And finding that balance and finding out that that actually works too was a very important part for myself and kind of help strengthen myself with my coaches and slowly be that first seed in helping my mental health. Although that would take a couple years to really take shape.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you eventually ended up going to Rio.
Yeah.
For the Paralympics. How old were you then?
I was, I would have been 21 years old at that time.
That's so young. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think about this a lot, actually, is age and maturity going into professional level athletics, because we all saw the whole figure skating thing with Russia mm-hmm. a while back, and I couldn't help but feel like so terrible for these like 15 to 16 year old girls that were being criticized mm-hmm. by the entire world, and I'm like, they're children and figure skating is their yeah. entire world. But that's a whole other that's a whole other can of worms.
Oh yeah.
You're 21.
Yeah.
And you're in Rio.
Yeah.
For the Paralympics.
Yeah.
What was your mentality with training like by now?
By now I was really taking care of myself on the training part, still not really taking care of my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, like going to that Rio year, I was in Paris swimming. How it works is the IPC, the International Paralympic Committee, gave out 650 spots between every country in the world, and Canada was given 22, 11 for the men on the Canadian program and 11 for the women in the Canadian program. And going in, everyone, of course, has their rankings of where athletes are going to fall. I was ranked 19th out of the men. Like, I was told that I had my childhood hero as well as other teammates laugh in my face at the thought of me making that team. So being able to qualify, and once I qualify, I had teammates telling me, you don't deserve to be on this team. You do not deserve to be here representing Canada at the Paralympics.
You had teammates tell you that?
I had a teammate tell me that, yeah.
Oh my goodness. What? Okay, I guess, well, this is the perfect question to ask right now. What was the culture like for the team? I feel like I've already gotten my answer.
Entirely toxic? Or like, was there like some nice moments, like some people were like, I guess not coaches, but like other teammates that I would look out for you, or was it just
I have a very close group of teammates that I and friends that I still talk with, still see, but there was a lot of things going on in the program. But fortunately, being able to qualify, the staff still named me team captain in Rio. So I had the responsibility of being team captain, making sure everyone was okay. Although I had stuff said to me in the past, that has to be water under the bridge at that point, and taking mm-hmm. my own ego out of the picture, out of the way.
It's so interesting to me that even at like literal national level sports, they still have team captains. I don't know why that feels so funny to me, but
yeah.
That's very, and you were only 21 at this point.
21,
it's very
yeah.
mature of you. I definitely would not. I'm not 20 yet, but
yeah.
I don't think I, at this point in my life, could not be petty about that.
I feel like if I was in your position, I would like kind of quit and like just like.
Yeah, that's another thing.
I don't deserve this.
It's
maybe
like quitting. Like there has to have been moments where you were like, I'm gonna quit.
There's one that stands out before Rio. It mm-hmm. was I was so determined on making that team. I was going to do whatever it took to be able to compete at the Paralympics in Rio de Janeiro. And being able to compete, being able to race, was one of the biggest honors of my life. Being in front of that stadium that seated that many people and was just a raucous atmosphere every single night there. And being the team captain, I was there in the mornings. I was there at the final. I was there in the evenings for finals. So I really got to take that in. And I kind of told myself leading up to that, I want to be a part of that. So quitting wasn't really an option. Mm-hmm. And as the post-game depression kicked in for me on top of my own depression, I had a moment where life got really dark, and I'm very fortunate to be alive today during those times. And coming out the other side, I realized that I really have to take care of myself. I really have to support myself. I have to be there for myself. And in that 2017 year, about midway through in the summer, I had been rehabbing from a knee injury that took me out for the whole year. I was not able to swim, but I wanted to get back. I wanted that shot at Tokyo, because in Tokyo 2020 or 2021, as it's now, I was an expected medal favorite. I was expected to be on the podium in Tokyo. And coming back from that knee injury, I had a chance to swim with who was the Paralympic coach in Rio. But he'd moved across the country to get to know Quebec. So I took that chance to go train under him, go swim under him there. And being there, still had that focus of, I want to be a Tokyo medalist. Mm-hmm. But there were some issues going on, and I felt that I needed to take care of myself at the end of the day. And as I was getting into April, May of that year, I needed to make a decision that was best for my mental health, because mm-hmm. there's no point in sacrificing your mental health, as I learned the hard way in my own life, mm-hmm. for an artificial success where you're gonna win a medal, but you're also gonna not be happy. You're gonna be hurting. You're gonna be in a situation that's not content for you. And as I made that decision in 2018, at that point, in May of 2018, that I was going to retire from swimming, I was super content. I was super happy, but I had one last thing I wanted to do, and that was to go compete at the Para Pan Pacific Championships that was going to take place in Australia in 2018. So we had our national championships a month before that in Edmonton in July. The competition, the Para Pan Pacifics, will be taking place in August in Australia. And there, I had a moment where I could feel like these old problems coming back, and I knew that it was the right decision to step away from swimming. I did not end up making that team, but I was content on where I was at and how I got myself there at the end of the day. Where before Rio, I was so determined, or even like a little bit after Rio, till I really started taking care of my mental health and opened up about my struggles, I was just so determined on being a medalist, where after that moment, I was like, this is not good for me. This is not good for my mental health, and I need to take care of that at the end of the day.
Yeah, geez. Yeah, it sounds like, I mean, we don't have all the time in the world to really dive into all the ins and outs of mental health and sport, but I have, like, so much admiration for your ability to, like, I'm sure there are things you wish you still could have done with swimming and finished, but that just, like, that, like, inherent feeling of being like, you know what, I stepped away and it's for the better, mm-hmm. and just being very at peace with that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't doubt that it's still hard and you still want to go back and do things differently.
It was hard for the longest time, where I knew I was doing something right for me, mm-hmm. but there was years where I could not watch swimming. I could not look at the sport. I completely like didn't block anyone or didn't block anything, but I just like unfollowed like a couple of, like, swim pages I used to follow, just because I could not see that side of the sport. And it took me a while just to be able to even be around a pool. I still haven't swam in over 4 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Jeez.
And that's just sometimes when you're done.
You're done.
You're done with it. But I've gotten into coaching, swim coaching, which is one of the coolest things ever. Yeah. Often right now, because of my cycling training, mm-hmm. I'm somewhat sporadic with the coaching, but I'm coaching kids from ages 5 to 9 and then like 9 to 17. So it's quite a different groupings, but it's a lot of fun coaching a lot of younger kids and seeing the enjoyment, seeing the happiness they get out of it, and just trying to give them the best, most positive experience that they can out of that sport.
Yeah, coaching is definitely very rewarding. I had a very similar experience to you. I left my sport kind of on, well, not, I don't know, I left my sport on very bad terms. And I think leaving sport was harder than any breakup I'd ever gone through. Yeah. There is truly something just like so all-encompassing about leaving something that you've dedicated your entire self, your entire life, so much time, effort, energy, sacrifices that you've made.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to leave this sport on my sport on good terms. And I think coaching has been a wonderful way to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that the really most amazing way just to fully go out on your own terms. Like the people I cared about, the people I wanted in my own life, and the people I still want to communicate with, I made sure that I left on good terms with them when I stepped away. And I still have them in touch with me. I had still talked to them, which is the most important thing to me, is still having those kinds of people there, because there's a bad thing that may happen or a series of events, but as long as you can have like a couple people, which I was very fortunate to have, still somewhat leaves that hope that you can still have a positive impact down the road.
Man, how was your Paralympic experience? Was it everything you could have hoped for?
As an athlete, it was. It was incredible to be able to be at the games, let alone qualify for a finals and race in front of 15,000 people in a stadium, which for me was something out of a movie, out of a fantasy I never thought was possible. And especially for us, when I walked out, I barely qualified for the final by about 0.1, 0.2 seconds. So I'm the first athlete out on the pool deck. They introduced myself, Nathan Clement from Canada, a couple claps, a couple cheers. But right behind me was a Brazilian. And as soon as that green and blue flag went up on that screen, it was screaming.
What a way to feel inferior, hey? What a humbling experience.
I got completely showed up.
When you think you've made it to the biggest level.
But it was so cool because I raced on the second day and it was nothing but like for 5 minutes straight, it was just 15,000 people screaming, Brazil, Brazil, Brazil. And they actually had to stop and delay our race a little bit because it was so loud in there.
That's really like, heartwarming in a sense, though.
Like even in the studio here, we're probably like 3-4 feet apart from each other.
Yeah.
Right now, like, we could not hear what each other were saying in that place. Like, it was surreal how loud and electric it was.
I'm so glad that experience was that. It sounds like you gained a lot from swimming and leaving swimming and all the trials and tribulations that came with it.
Yeah.
And now you bike. But
I bike.
Before we talk about bikes, we're going to go to another break. And then once we're back, we'll talk about bikes.
Ooh.
This is a journey into sound. I shouldn't be
Gotta have house music. Gotta have house.
Hi, this is DJ Wah, inviting you to join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. here on 101.9 CITR for Techno Progressivo.
You in my hug now. My life.
This is the house that funk built. This is the house that funk built.
Techno Progressivo is the only radio show in Vancouver where you'll hear the best mix of new tech house, techno, and progressive house.
A body bang. A...
So join me every second Sunday at 8 p.m. for Techno Progressivo.
House music. House music.
Now Eurovision. Hey, psst. Actually, it's called Shindig. Prepare for the ultimate battle of the bands. The best from Vancouver's musicians come together to show their talents. Starting with 16 bands and one final winner.
Qualifiers on November 1st, 5th, 18th and 27th, with the finale on December 2nd at the Redgate Art Society. Be there or like be square.
Hi, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM. So, Nathan no longer swims, but Nathan rides bikes. And I guess this is a funny little insight into my life. I also ride bikes. I am, however, not on Team Canada. I ride very amateurly. But Nathan has this, like, this gorgeous, like, Cervelo trike, and it's just so shiny and beautiful. And I guess this is, like, really irrelevant to anyone who doesn't ride bikes, but Cervelos are very expensive bikes. So how did you get into cycling?
I always did cycling as kind of like a cross training on top of cross training, where I would just go biking with my buddies, or even like as a very, very little kid recovering from my stroke, my dad set up the system because I loved like Thomas the Tank Engine, loved Pengu, loved the Ants in the Pants, like those kind of like treehouse shows.
Pengu.
So my dad would set up this bike in front of the TV, but he powered it in a way that if I stopped pedaling, the TV would turn off.
Oh my gosh, is your father an engineer? Is he actually an engineer?
He's not. No, he just wanted to help me. So he set
self-made.
So he set up the system.
Can I actually get your dad to do this for me? I'm serious about this. Okay, we'll talk about this when we're off air. But anyway, so you've always kind of been into cycling.
So I've always been kind of into bikes, but it was like very much somewhat a hurdle I had to get over at different points was like getting into biking. But like once I stepped away and I was content in life with what I was doing, I decided to do the early 20-year-old thing and go backpacking for a little bit, and as I was
rite of passage,
yeah.
I'm on the cusp of doing that, planning my Europe trip,
and like going from country to country, really like experiencing the cultures, experiencing the different foods of many different places. I kept thinking to myself, how cool would this be to see it in the most authentic, real way you can by cycling around the world?
That's something only an athlete would think.
Yeah.
Like, nobody else shares this thought with you. I'm sorry to inform you. Okay, but you were like, wow, flashbulb moment.
Yeah, flashbulb moment.
Bikes, eureka.
Bikes, eureka. I can do that.
Yeah, I guess you technically can.
So when I came back home in a lot of credit card debt, I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to be here for a little while. But that gives me time to do a lot of training. And this was in January of 2019. Mm-hmm. So I started working, doing the odd job, and just started training, preparing for my grandiose idea to cycle around the world and hopefully set the record for the fastest person with disability to do it.
That is ridiculous.
Very admirable.
And so when you say around the world, does that mean every continent? Like, what does this entail?
So there's a Guinness World Record setup they have, which is point A to point B, where you have to cycle 29,000 kilometers at least, have to fly like 13,000 kilometers by air or transit. As well, on top of that, go to two different polar points, two opposite ends of the Earth. So, like, for example, an opposite end would be, like, Madrid in Spain, and then, like, Auckland in New Zealand, for example. So, like, two opposite points of the world, and you have to do, like, whatever way possible you can. Like, there's people who do it from, like, Alaska to Newfoundland, from, like, L.A. to New York, and then go to, like, Lisbon to, like, Beijing, or go down from Paris to Singapore. So there's like multiple ways of doing it and like hitting up as many countries as you can and many continents as you can. But for me, trying to do it was just trying to see like, okay, what am I capable of doing with this ride, with this opportunity? And as I was getting more and more into training, and I felt like I was going to get into a really strong 2020 and hopefully be able to depart in early 2021, COVID came along and kind of took away travel for everyone. So that year, I really had to reroute what I wanted to do because it's quite an ambitious thing, let alone I've never bike packed. I've never like set up a bike tent before and just done like an overnight kind of riding.
Yeah.
So in the summer of 2020, I was like, okay, I need to see if I could even do this in the first place. So I decided to attempt a bike across BC, and I was very fortunate enough to bike across British Columbia from Fernie, BC, right along the border, yeah, all the way to Ambleside Park in West Vancouver. Just doing that ride in 11 days just was one of the most surreal experiences, seeing like wild horses on random mountaintops, seeing a lot of the province and really experiencing that. And as I got back into Vancouver, our former reporter who works with Swimming Canada, Jim Morrison. Jim Morris, sorry, that's the second time I've called him.
Yeah, it was like Jim Morrison. That sounds so familiar.
That's the second time I've called him Jim Morris while being...
Put some respect on Jim Morris's name.
radio or TV, so he called me up and did an interview. And during the interview, he asked me, would you ever compete again in cycling on the para side? And I kind of sat on that for a couple weeks, kind of weighing the pros and cons of going back into the grind, going back into the trenches. That is high-performance sport, and really realizing that if I'm going to do this again and if I'm going to attempt to go to another games, the number one thing I have to do is take care of myself. Mental health, physical health, just make sure that that's my number one priority, because it's not worth it if I'm just going in there to blow myself up again. I'm a lot older. I'm not as young and...
You're not a spring chicken.
Not a spring chicken, no. No.
Okay, cycling. That is, I guess, like you just got to do running next and then you can just do a triathlon.
Oh, no, I can't run to save my life. So running's completely out of the question.
It's okay. Okay. I'm with you on that.
Okay, so cycling. And you've got a trike.
I do.
You've got a trike. What is the hardest part about riding a trike?
The hardest part.
Or racing a trike.
The hardest part about riding a trike or racing in a trike is, first off, trying to figure out how a trike works, because with a two-wheel bike, you're obviously used to shifting your body weight, but with a trike, it's a very different game of learning how much weight distribution is needed, how much movement is needed. So for myself, I only have use of my right arm, and my left arm just kind of sits on my handlebar. Same as like most of my power is coming from my right leg and very minimal is coming from my left leg. So very much trying to counterbalance in some situations, because there's a lot of curves, a lot of embankments on a road, or even slopes or slants. So very much trying to learn how to shift weight at top speeds. Like during the summer at the World Cup and World Championships, there were some roads that had decambers in it, which made life really interesting when you don't really have use of one arm or one leg and having to put all that body weight over there. But being able to ride and race on a trike is one of the craziest and most exciting things I've ever done, because although you're on a three wheels and it's supposedly safe, it is the least safe bike out there. It is beyond dangerous, because you have guys going at like 40-45 k an hour trying to hit you, trying to bump into you and get you off the bike, or make sure that you're getting out of their way on the race.
Yeah, I feel like
around Vancouver, I always keep an eye out for cyclists. And I've seen the tandem bikes, the carbon tandem bikes, which are sick, by the way. I'm trying to convince one of my friends to ride one with me, but he's like, the thing with me and tandem bikes is I want to do sick tricks on it, and you're too scared to do that. And I was like, fair enough. But I have never seen a carbon trike.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really lucky at that racing side, and like going to a lot of those competitions, there's a lot of carbon bike frames, because all you need is take the back tire off any bike, and if you're able to get like a little kit at the back, then you're able to set it up on the back axles, and then you're able to ride with the trike kit at the back, which has two wheels, one on the right side, one on the left side, and a little what's the best way, a little, I guess you'd call it like a carbon kit there that has the chain, has everything connected.
So now that like you're in Team Canada cycling, how would you compare the experience to swimming? Was there still like some kind of toxicity, or was...
I love the team. Everyone
wins in cycling.
Everyone is an amazing person. I was very grateful to be taken in and be a part of these teams this summer, and meet some amazing athletes, some amazing people who have incredible depth of character. With swimming, it's a lot of a younger group. With cycling, I'm one of the youngest people at 28 on the team. And just being able to be brought in and being part of a culture with the staff who are just the most amazing people, where in swimming, all you do is just hop up on the blocks, go race. In cycling, before the race, they're asking you, oh, do you need water? Do you need a drink mix? Do you need bars? Do you need gels? And they're helping you get your jersey on. They're helping you get set up on the bike, making sure you have everything you need to be able to compete, race, and just be at your best self. And there's always so much selflessness that goes on that team and with that group of people, that just kind of shows that right now we have a really exciting future ahead.
Well, speaking of futures, what are your next plan? The next Paralympic, I think it's in Paris, two years later,
which is now under 2 years away, which is kind of like an exciting thought of hopefully being able to go back to another games and be able to race in like a very kind of famous city for cycling, like,
oh my gosh, Paris,
like Paris.
I didn't even think about that.
Which would be one of the coolest opportunities. There is a lot of racing coming up this year, and just really making sure that I'm able to hit the points I need to point, because it's made very clear to me, if I want a shot at making the Paris team, I got to be a medal contender in 2024. So really taking the time to take care of nutrition, body health, mental health, and finding ways that I can excel most. Like coming up in a few weeks, I'm going to Victoria to do some testing there, meeting hopefully my future nutritionist and hopefully my future strength and conditioning coordinator, then going to Tucson, Arizona a week after that for endurance training, with only a couple months away from some competitions going on in Europe and in the U.S. So it's really just...
Are you doing road races?
Road races, yeah. Yeah, so nice. It's going to be really full on, but just going in there, taking in all the experience, because I'm very young, very new to my cycling experience, and hopefully very early in the cycling journey ahead. But there's a lot that can happen from now to next week or even the week after that. So just taking that time in, making sure I'm the best athlete I can be when it comes time for selections for Paris and competitions down the road.
Yeah, and just going back to the Team Canada thing, do you think, how do I put it, do you think the atmosphere is different just because, like you said, everyone's kind of more mature, I guess older, in Team Canada cycling? Because you said swimming is like full of young guys trying to make it big, trying to make get their name out there.
Swimming's been making a lot of changes from what I've heard, and there's still some amazing people on that team and amazing people who were on the team when I was there as well. And to be able to be in two different sports, you kind of notice some things and notice what some sports do, what some sports don't do at the end of the day. And with that cycling group, I feel like as I've been told, there's been a lot of turnover in years before me, and right now they have a really good kind of core nucleus that was very accommodating and nice to me and a couple other newer athletes, a part of the program and part of the system, and it just kind of gives us that warmth and that realization that now we're the new kids on the block, but someday there's going to be other new kids on the block. And right. It's your responsibility to take care of them, make sure they're okay and they're able to be set up for their own successes down the road. Because sport is a weird team dynamic, especially when it's an individual sport or even a team sport where you have teammates. But these are also guys and girls that, if the opportunity comes and it comes down to you or them for a spot, you're going to have to beat them out for a spot on the team. So there's that balance where in cycling it feels like, although what happens on the road, what happens on the track, what happens during these races is chaos, but as a team, you're there to support each other and you're there to help each other be the best person they can be. And the best athlete they can be.
We're running out of time, but this is such like a typical end of interview question, but I always feel like it's so open-ended that it's worth asking. What advice would you give to any young para-athlete or aspiring para-athlete?
The major thing I would like to share, and I've said to athletes I coach and people around, is take that time to evaluate what you're doing for yourself, whether it's training, taking care of yourself outside of the pool, outside of the court, having that balance where you have a dream, you have a goal in mind, where you say you want to go to Paris, say you want to go to LA, say you want to go to the next Winter Games, or just be able to compete, have fun in the sport. It's important to have those balances where you're competing, you're striving for your dreams and goals, but you're also taking that time to take care of yourself and evaluating what you can do, whether it's you can build better or things you're doing well that you can even build on further, and just really finding the strength that can help you be the best athlete you can be, but also be the best person you can be.
I think that was a very well put
that
together
was so insightful.
Response.
Now I'm like so inspired to go home and Zwift.
I feel like I want to work out now.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on today, Nathan. I really appreciate it. And everyone at CITR wishes you all the best with your future endeavors. And I'd love to go to Paris if that's an option. Just put me in your pocket and I'll go cheer you on. I'll be your support crew. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on. And it's been really wonderful to hear about what it's been like to be a para athlete, but also just the mental struggles that you've had along the way, and how age and maturity has played into that.
Well, thank you for having me on here today. It's amazing hearing all your stories and being a part of this discussion.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
Thank you too, Jackie.
Thank you.
We will hear from you next week, I guess, or you guys will hear from me next week at CITR 101.9 FM, 6 to 7 p.m. is All Access Pass.